News Network. Maybe the scariest thing there is today is truth in media, especially the news. Get not only the news, but the truth in the news and nothing else. From TNN, the Truth News Network. Without the other guy's spin, here's your host, Dan Newman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to TNN, the Truth News Network. So glad you joined us today. We're back in Congress with our conversation today. But we're talking about obstruction, and the title of today's podcast is Lock Them Up. It has been obscene to watch congressional committees subpoena witnesses to appear and to subpoena various government agencies for the production of documents regarding very serious investigations, only to be stonewalled again and again. Potential witnesses and those who receive production of document subpoenas are not appearing and not producing those documents demanded by Congress. The Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence are the two chief committees who have fought for testimony and documents from current and former Department of Justice employees and others, which seldom see successful subpoena results, either for appearances or document productions. This is especially frustrating, not just for committee members, but for American citizens who expect government to be not only responsive in providing evidence in these investigative matters, but to achieve expected results from the various investigations that are already underway and those that need to begin. For the seemingly nonstop obstruction of witness testimony and document production, Americans want not just answers, but results. So, our question to answer today is, what can be done? Well, rest better tonight knowing that there is recourse. Follow this line of reasoning. Following the refusal of a witness to produce documents or to testify, the committee in Congress is entitled to report a resolution of contempt to its parent chamber. In other words, that House committee can report contempt of Congress to the full House of Representatives, and the Senate committee can do the same thing for the full Senate. A committee may also cite a person for contempt, but not immediately report the resolution to the floor. In the case of subcommittees, they report the resolution of contempt to the full committee, which then has the option of rejecting that contempt petition, or accepting but not reporting it to the floor, or accepting it and reporting it to the floor of the chamber for action. On the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate, the reported resolution is considered privileged, and if the resolution of contempt is passed, the chamber has several options to enforce its mandate. So, let's talk about inherent contempt. Under this process, the procedure for holding a person in contempt involves only the chamber concerned. Following a contempt citation, the person cited is arrested by the sergeant at arms for the House or the Senate, brought to the floor of the chamber, held to answer charges by the presiding officer, and then subjected to punishment as the chamber may dictate. Usually, that's imprisonment for punishment reasons, imprisonment for coercive effect, or release from the contempt citation. The witness would have certain due process rights, of course, such as the right to counsel, to be advised of the nature of the charges, and to confront witnesses and compel them to appear on his or her behalf. The witness could also resort to the courts, for example, by seeking a writ of habeas corpus if wrongfully detained. If the dispute were over something like executive privilege, you'd expect the executive branch to seek judicial intervention at the outset to head off the proceeding. But even then, at least Congress would get a judicial ruling on the privilege question rather than being forced to rely simply on the executive's own interpretation. Remember that sentence. Congress would get a judicial ruling on the privilege question rather than being forced to rely simply on the executive's own interpretation. And boy, have we heard that given in excuses again and again by DOJ officials. Concerned with the time-consuming nature of a contempt proceeding and the inability to extend punishment further than the session of Congress concerned, that's under a previous Supreme Court ruling, Congress created a statutory process in 1857. While Congress retains its inherent contempt authority and may exercise it at any time, the inherent contempt process was last used by the Senate in 1934 in a Senate investigation of airlines and the U.S. Postmaster. After a one-week trial on the Senate floor, presided over by Vice President John Nance Garner in his capacity as Senate President, William P. McCracken Jr., a lawyer and former Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Aeronautics, who was charged with allowing clients to remove or rip up subpoenaed documents, was found guilty and sentenced to 10 days imprisonment. McCracken filed a petition of habeas corpus in federal courts to overturn his arrest, but after litigation, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Congress had acted constitutionally and denied the petition in the case Journey v. McCracken. Then there's statutory contempt. Following a contempt citation, the presiding officer of the chamber is instructed to refer the matter to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. According to the law, it is the duty of the U.S. Attorney to refer the matter to a grand jury for action. However, while the law places the duty on the U.S. Attorney to impanel a grand jury for action, some proponents of the unitary executive theory argue that the Congress cannot properly compel the U.S. Attorney to take such action against the executive branch, asserting that the U.S. Attorney is a member of the executive branch themselves, who ultimately reports only to the president, and that compelling the U.S. Attorney amounts to compelling the president himself. They argue that to allow Congress to force the president to take actions against a subordinate following his directives would be a violation of the separation of powers and infringe on the power of the executive branch. The legal basis for this position, they contend, can be found in Federalist 49, in which James Madison wrote this. Madison said, "The several departments being perfectly coordinated by the terms of their common commission, none of them, it is evident, can pretend to an exclusive or superior right of settling the boundaries between their respective powers." This approach to government is commonly known as departmentalism or coordinate construction. Others argue that Article 2 of the Constitution requires the president to execute the law, such law being what the lawmaker, for example, Congress, in the case of statutory contempt, says that it is per Article 1. The executive branch cannot either define the meaning of the law, such powers of legislation being reserved only to Congress, or interpret the law, such powers being reserved to the several federal courts. They argue that any attempt by the executive to define or interpret the law would be a violation of the separation of powers. The executive may only, and is obligated to, execute the law consistent with its definition and interpretation. And if the law specifies a duty on one of the president's subordinates, then the president must take care to see that the duty specified in the law is executed. To avoid or neglect the performance of this duty would not be faithful execution of the law, and would thus be a violation of the separation of powers, which the Congress and the courts have several options to remedy. According to a detailed study of Congress's contempt power by the Congressional Research Service, this inherent contempt power has long been dormant, hadn't been enacted in a long, long time. Congress has not sought to use it since 1935, perhaps because it's very unwieldy, time-consuming, and is politically, as you can imagine, distasteful. From time to time, partisans on one side or another argue that Congress should dust off the power and start arresting witnesses for contempt on its own, rather than relying on the statutory process of a referral to the U.S. attorney. Now, we're going to take a break here, but before we take a break, let me remind you, former Attorney General Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress. Congress referred that contempt petition to the U.S. Attorney in Washington, D.C., who declined to prosecute Eric Holder. That's why the thought and idea of Congress actually sending a sergeant of arms to arrest someone that's in contempt of Congress and put them in jail seems to be far more palatable and far more reasonable at this point in American history. We got a lot more to talk about. Sit tight. We'll be right back here at truthnewsnet.org.
We're here asking people from all over what they think of Lipton green tea. Let's hear what people from Texas have to say.
Mm-mm.
How about China?
Mmm.
Germany?
Mmm.
How about people from the North Pole?
Mmm.
Or Mars?
Mmm.
What about mimes? Oh, right. People with their jaws wired shut?
Mmm.
Yeah, a barbershop quartet.
Mmm.
Oh, you guys are great. How about race car drivers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what about you, high school glee club, here on a field trip? Well, that settles it. It sounds like everyone loves the taste of Lipton green tea. With its protective antioxidants from real tea, it's not just good for you, it's to you. Lipton tea can do that.
Clarity of thought. Clarity of vision, clarity of message. Real truth, real news, TNN, the Truth News Network. Again, Dan Newman.
And today we're talking once again about Congress, but this time we're talking about issues regarding Congress having to find people in contempt of not testifying before Congress when subpoenaed, also not providing documents that Congress has subpoenaed. Here's the bottom line for American citizens. As we reported yesterday's story and podcast, taxpayers fund the operation of Congress to the tune of close to $5 billion a year. That number includes funding all of the legislative operations of the House and Senate and all of the other constitutional functions relegated to the U.S. Congress, including implementation of all constitutional and congressionally passed laws and their enforcement, plus, as the Constitution dictates, operational actions as agreed to by members of Congress that may from time to time be violated. Those actions include adherence to production and appearance according to legally issued and served subpoenas for all applicable persons. The criminal offense of contempt of Congress sets the penalty at not less than 1 month, nor more than 12 months in jail, and a fine of not less than $100, nor more than $1,000. But let's be honest about all this. There's a multitude of federal government officials that have been and currently are under subpoena for appearances and production of documents regarding governmental operations and activities that occurred in the professional lives of those subpoenaed regarding government operations and investigations. Those documents and sworn testimony expected to occur as a result of subpoenas are necessary for the legal and just operation of the government through its various departments and agencies. The American government has the legal right to expect adherence to the terms of those subpoenas, and those that are subpoenaed must comply. Former Department of Justice Chief Counsel James Baker testified before Congress yesterday about numerous of these matters. Prior to that meeting, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio spoke to Fox News about this entire matter, especially on the frustration of Congress about Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's resistance to subpoenas.
Back to one of our top stories this morning, former FBI attorney James Baker soon to reappear before the House Judiciary Committee for yet another high-stakes hearing. Baker expected to face tough questions about Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and those wiretap claims. Let's bring in Congressman Jim Jordan, who sits on the committee and will be in that room asking questions today. Congressman, always great to see you, and good morning
to you.
I should note that it's interesting to make note that Baker had a close working relationship with former FBI Director James Comey before he left the Bureau. You will be in today's closed door meeting. What questions do you have for James Baker?
I think the first area where we start is, look, Andrew McCabe, Lisa Page met with Rod Rosenstein, Mr. Rosenstein said that he was thinking about actually recording the commander-in-chief in the Oval Office, recording the President of the United States. Right after that meeting, Mr. McCabe, Ms. Page come and talk to Jim Baker. And he took that very seriously, what was discussed in that previous meeting. I want to go from there. What did you guys do? Was there some kind of legal analysis of actually looking to record the President of the United States? What subsequent meetings took place? So I think those are the first set of questions, first series of questions we'll ask Mr. Baker, and then a host of other things we've got to get to as well.
Right. So in just about 30 minutes or now, you'll have a chance to ask those questions. He will be testifying after some explosive testimony yesterday where he basically called the Russia probe being handled in an abnormal fashion and also mentioned that it reflected political bias. That's a quote. This is no surprise. I'm not sure if Democrats seem surprised by this, given the Peter Strzok and Lisa Page texts. But is political bias here enough to derail the politically driven Mueller probe?
Well, I do think it was interesting that yesterday Rod Rosenstein has time to sit down with the Wall Street Journal, do a big long interview where he says the Mueller investigation is appropriate and moving in the right direction. And yet he can't come talk to Congress about the idea that he made a statement about recording the President of the United States. Remember, Rosenstein's a guy who picked Mueller in the first place. So that to me is the most frustrating part. Rod Rosenstein, you got time for an interview where you say the Mueller investigation is appropriate and independent, but you can't answer Congress's questions about something you said in a meeting with the deputy head of the FBI at a time when he was, frankly, acting head of the FBI because Mr. Comey had been fired by the memo you wrote. So the fact that Rod Rosenstein was a no-show last week is something that is just not right. He's obligated, as a guy who is Senate confirmed, when the chairman of the committee that has jurisdiction over your agency asked you to come to Congress and testify, you were obligated to do that, and you're supposed to do it under oath. And he was a no-show, yet he's got time to talk to the press about the Mueller investigation.
I want to read a portion of his interview, Rosenstein's interview with the Wall Street Journal. He defends a Mueller probe. He calls it appropriate and independent and says this in part. People are entitled to be frustrated. I can accept that. But at the end of the day, the public will have confidence that the cases we brought were warranted by the evidence and that it was an appropriate use of resources. I have a solemn responsibility to make sure that cases like that are pursued and prosecuted, and I'm pleased the president has been supportive of that. If you got a chance to interview Rosenstein finally, what would you ask him?
Well, I would ask him, talk about frustrating. Why hasn't he given us the McCabe memos that we've subpoenaed? Why hasn't he given us the 302s from Bruce Ohr? Why hasn't he opened the FISA application, the part that we know we need to see that Chairman Nunes has talked about? Why haven't we got an update from John Huber, the U.S. attorney who's supposed to be looking into things that went on in the FBI? Why hasn't none of those things happened? And then we don't get all that information that we are entitled to get as a separate and equal branch of government, and he's a no-show, and Glenn Simpson takes the fifth? Of course we're frustrated. So I want Mr. Rosenstein to come in to answer lots of questions, like about the documents and the requests we have outstanding, but also, most importantly, about this conversation he had with Andy McCabe, where he said he was thinking about recording the president.
Just 2 weeks into the job, we should also add.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Exactly right.
All right.
Exactly
good luck this morning. You've got a big day ahead of you. Thank you very much, Congressman Jordan.
Did Congressman Jim Jordan sound a little frazzled about all this to you? Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein is supposed to appear before a Congressional Oversight Committee next week. Mr. Rosenstein has continuously ignored, as the entire Department of Justice has done, they've ignored subpoenas issued for production of documents for more than a year that are needed to show DOJ justification for the FISA applications for authorization to surveil through electronic measures members of the Trump campaign, possibly including the president. On multiple occasions, with the subpoena of other DOJ documents, the excuse for non-production has been for national security reasons. Some documents have been released, at least in part, that when released prove they were not being held originally for national security purposes, but rather they contained embarrassing information about the DOJ, the FBI, and the CIA. Let's suppose that when Deputy AG Rosenstein walks into the hearing, the sergeant at arms hands him a subpoena that compels him to, within 48 hours or less, provide those other documents to Congress and to testify under oath, which he is refusing to do, regarding the information confirmed by others that he discussed his personal illegal surveillance of President Trump by wearing a wiretap while in a private meeting with the president. Rosenstein has, for any number of reasons, none of which are true for national security purposes, resisted personal testimony under oath and the production of all those documents. If he refuses to appear and produce within the 48-hour window detailed in that subpoena that we're asking him to be handed, have the sergeant-at-arms arrest him for criminal contempt of congressional subpoena, take him to jail, and jail him per federal law that has been tested and ruled constitutional previously by the U.S. Supreme Court. What good would that do, you ask? It would send a message that finally members of Congress have decided to stop just talking about doing their oversight job and actually doing Department of Justice oversight. It would certainly result in the sworn testimony of Rosenstein, because he would come back. I promise you, he's not going to stay in jail. It would also provide that testimony would certainly result in additional information necessary to initiate further federal actions regarding criminal wrongdoing, alleged criminal wrongdoing by those currently in U.S. government, and probably some who have retired or been terminated previously. Jailing Rosenstein would send a resonating message to everybody who are part of the government that Congress is no longer willing to let the tail wag the dog. But the dog, that's us, you and me, the American people, demand the enforcement of federal laws, all federal laws, and that nobody is above the law. And when those laws are broken, like ignoring subpoenas, legal penalties for wrongdoing will be immediate and they will be harsh. If members of Congress will grow backbones and simply do their jobs, Americans will finally see the truth in all this. Americans will see just how evil the critters in the swamp really are. We've been hearing about them for years now, 3 years, during a campaign, almost 2 years of this presidential administration. There is a swamp, and there are a bunch of evil critters that are in that swamp. Maybe then, when the light comes on, the president will be finally able to start draining that swamp. Remember? He was elected. Now maybe it's time that he'll be able to start draining the swamp. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. This has really been a rough couple of days. You know, for many, many years, members of Congress have been revered. And we're very thankful that they've been public servants. But they've almost stopped serving the American public and got to start doing that again. You have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow right here.
Facts and evidence is all you'll see and hear. TNN, the Truth News Network. Truth News Network.